Pretty exciting news. I think Will Ferrell just followed me on Twitter. Yeah, I mean, let me just double check if he has the no blue check mark. It's the false Will Ferrell. Darn it. You imagine if Will Ferrell followed me on Twitter? That'd be pretty cool. It is the Midday Show. Welcome back. Thanks for being along. 12:05. This is an update on a story that we spoke about in early February concerning residents near Breslau Memorial Park. Resident Matthew Vandermeer has spoken out about a possible school and a public library being built in that area. Now, at Thursday night's public meeting, he says about 200 people attended, with only a few speaking in support of the project. Before he joins us live, we have a quick comment to play from Waterloo Catholic District School Board Chair Manuel Da Silva, who spoke to some of the concerns that have been raised.
Most of the concerns were related to, taking up green space. There was some misunderstanding. People thought it was going to be more than it actually is. The school board is only looking for about 2.6 acres, and the park is overall is about 19 acres. Some people were concerned about, obstructing because there was going to be a two-story, but we again explained that the two-story building would not be any higher than the existing gym that is on the park side already.
All right, so there you go. That is Waterloo Catholic District School Board Chair Manuel Da Silva. So if the township decides to sell the land, the board will proceed with this plan. Now, joining me on the line is Matthew Vandermeer, a Breslau resident who we spoke to about this in early February. Matthew, thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. You obviously heard what Manuel Da Silva had to say. And if I'm understanding this correctly, right now this is in the hands of the township?
Yes, the township is the technical owner of this property at this time, yes.
Tell me about Thursday night's public meeting. There was about 200 people that attended this. What was the outcome of that?
It was definitely a meeting where a lot of passionate people were passionate about the project and not really passionate in a way that the school board was hoping. Many people spoke out against the plan. And I would say that the green space, as Mr. Da Silva had mentioned there, was definitely part of it. But I would say a bigger proportion of, anger about the whole project is just the township's handling of what they're calling financial discrepancies, about the township saying this is the only way that these upgrades to our park will ever happen. So that there are some people here there who wanted to challenge that notion. And the second half of the anti, I guess you could say, the project was people worried about safety and how do you share public spaces and maintain student safety.
Originally, when we spoke about this, you had raised the concern, obviously, you paid a premium for your lot, and you didn't want that to be taken away, though, right? So it was very much about the green space.
I would agree. My first reaction to this, right when I first heard about it, was one of, hey, this is not at all what I'm talking about. But I would say over the course of time, you sort of have to, put reality in your lens, of course. So that reality says that premium was paid to the developer and it was not paid to the township. So, the idea of premiums didn't even come up in the meeting at all. And many people who were at that meeting did pay those premiums. So I think we've kind of gotten over this idea that, hey, I paid for this space, it's mine now. So it's something a little bit different there now.
So that's obviously beef that if you'd like to, you would take up with the developer or rather the builder with the homes, right?
If I really wanted to follow that legalities, I would do that there. But I think we've separated that little piece out with more of what's actually happening here in the park. What is the township telling us? What do we believe is happening? And the idea of development in this space.
Now, Matthew, let me ask you about this lack of trust. I mean, why do people seemingly not trust what the township is telling them?
That's an excellent question. I can only provide a brief glimpse of that. I mean, in Breslau, for a very long time, they've always kind of felt that things don't happen in Breslau because things always happen in the big, we'll call it the center, which is Elmira.
Right.
And there is this underlying tension of residents of Breslau that goes back a much longer than my involvement, that just has this underlying tone of like, yeah, well, we see Elmira getting a brand new arena. We see Elmira getting, these other types of projects, new parks and things. And we're like, well, how come Breslau has this park that we have that's basically falling apart? I mean, there is a little tuck shop kind of snack bar stand there that can't be used because it's not a safe place. There is a single washroom that cannot be used because it's not sanitary or safe. So it's kind of this locked up building that's just there. So now they're saying, hey, we can upgrade your park if we sell this piece of land and we'll get some money from that and we'll use that money to upgrade your park. And many of the residents were saying, well, how come this hasn't been done already? Like, why are we waiting until now? It's because you want something from us now. Now you want to say, we're going to upgrade your park. So there's a bit of history going on there as well.
Let's go back just a couple of steps, Matthew, in case you know, people kind of need a refresher of what's going on here. So the township were the ones that have recognized that there's a school needed. Is that right?
No, to my understanding, the school board, the Catholic school board, has a school in Maryhill right now, that St. Boniface, that they're going to close because of reasons I'm not fully up to date on. But that decision was made by the school board a number of months ago that they're going to close that school there, and they wanted to relocate the school. So they are looking for a space in Breslau to relocate the school because they believe the growth for the school board is in Breslau and not in Maryhill at this time. So the school board is actively looking for property within Breslau to put this school.
Which makes sense, right? I mean, if the school board is saying, look, most of the growth is in this particular area, why not build a school near where most of the growth is? People don't necessarily have a problem with that. And correct me if I'm wrong, it's just this particular green space that we're talking about. We just don't want it there.
I would say that is very much part of it. I would say most people are saying, there's lots of open space that's not used space whatsoever. Just scrub land that's rocks and dirt. Why can't we put schools in other particular locations and not this location, which is kind of central to all of the subdivision here in Breslau?
Why would you want a school, you know, in the middle of nowhere as opposed to in, you know, perhaps near a green space? I mean, was that brought up? Were there people saying that? I think it's a valid question. I mean, why would you want to build a school where land, you know, isn't being used as opposed to where there's homes and where there's green space?
That's an excellent point. However, Breslau is still expanding quite rapidly. So either you move this school to a place that's not quite used yet, just outside of where the houses are, and I guarantee 5 years from now that's going to be surrounded by houses.
Right.
Either that or that land that, you know, you could put it on will be houses. It's either or. It's going to be one or the other, and it's going to be that quite soon. The advantage to the school board in the location they're proposing is that they could start digging tomorrow. I mean, it's a nice flat piece of land. You don't have to grade it. It's ready to go. There's a full parking lot right beside it. You're halfway done. So that's why the school board is very interested in this particular piece of land, because they can start much quicker here. And so, I mean, from the school board's perspective, this is a big win. I mean, you get to share a gym that you don't have to build. You get to share a public library that will be serviced primarily by the region. So this is good for them. We're not sure that it's good for the residents of the township. And when the township comes in and says, well, if you want these upgrades to your park, you have to listen to us do this. And if you don't do this, you're not going to get those upgrades for 20 years.
Right.
That's what we were told.
Right.
So you kind of get your back up a little bit and you're like, okay, well, I want to challenge that notion of why there's no money for upgrades other than selling this particular piece of land.
Matthew Vandermeer is a Breslau resident, joins us on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. It is 12:13. How big is this green space, Matthew, and how much of it will the school take up?
Well, if you want to know the specific numbers, I would say I believe the numbers is 15 acres for the green space, and the actual physical school building will be a very tiny percentage of that. I'm not going to argue that point at all. It's more of, once the school gets located here, and once they realize, and maybe the school gets bigger, and maybe they want to make the school a little bigger or other ways, it's what happens next? Like, do we start getting portables on the school property? Do those portables start lining up in a big long line? Like, what happens next? If we say yes to this, what happens next? And I'll also mention that when I actually moved into the property that I have, the big gymnasium that was there was also not there. And there was also no plans for it to be there until the government, they got some funding from federal and provincial governments, and all of a sudden this massive gymnasium got put there. And now they want to put a school in front of that.
Yeah.
The thing is, well, what happens after that one?
Right.
It's, you know, to me, to be 100% honest with you, the worst case scenario is that I get a school in my backyard and hopefully an upgraded park. So I mean, I'm not going to go, you know, crazy and try to like block the building of the school. But I just want the township to really say, you know, really be honest, say what's going to happen here.
Right.
And when they were pressed in the meeting the other day about like exactly which upgrades were happening and how was they going to be allotted out, they're like, well, we're not exactly sure.
Right.
But we will invest all this money back in the park again.
You know, they just as you mentioned earlier, Matthew, they're happy. It's a good situation for them because a lot of the things are already in place. And look, Matthew, I don't want you to get me wrong. I understand that people are upset because things are changing, right? And whenever there's change, people should ask questions. And I'm glad that there's an engaged community that is asking a lot of questions. In fact, I applaud you guys for doing that because a lot of people might not even know. And then there's all of a sudden a school being built and they're like, hey, what's going on here? Right. So listen, I applaud you guys for being engaged and wanting to know exactly what is happening. I'm just wondering if, I mean, it's a school that we're talking about, right? I mean, it's your kids and other people's kids will be going there. It's near home. It's walking distance, etc. It's in green space. And I'm just wondering if what you're saying is, look, why doesn't the township come up and the board come up and really lay out the plan so that we know exactly 100% what's going on?
I mean, even if we knew 100% what's going on, it's just this idea of, is there a reason it has to go here? And is there a reason it can't go like 200 feet down the road and put it there, which would then, of course, increase green space in Breslau because they would get another whole schoolyard and another play structure that could be used in off times. Like, if the only reason why we're not doing that is because the school board wants to build today, if that's the only reason we're not looking at other options, then I kind of take issue with that. Now, if you tell me all these other locations that we have are just not suitable due to these particular reasons, well, then my opposition may go down a little bit. But it seems like the school board really wants this. They want it now and they want it here. And we just need to suck it up and deal with it.
Those provincial grants that you talked about, they have told you that Breslau will lose those if it's not built now?
Okay. So I'm talking about the upgrades to the park itself. So
okay.
The school board is going to buy this piece of land they want to build on for $1.75 million. That's what we were told. So now the township is going to take all of that money and then use it to upgrade certain parts of the park. One, the community center needs to be hooked up to the sewer system. That hasn't happened. Two, they want to build a new comfort station washrooms in the park and then hook that up to the sewer system. That needs to happen. And then they've listed a whole, you know, laundry list of other upgrades that they are promising residents that they will look into building. But when we kind of add all that up, we're concerned that they're giving us this long list, but half of them won't ever get done because they won't be able to afford them anyway.
What's the next step here?
I mean, for me, the next step is to continue to put the pressure on the township saying, you know, if you're going to push this through, despite vocal opposition, you better make good on your promises to finish the rest of it. That's my next steps to this project. And we'll have to see. I mean, I have talked to my counselors and I said, well, what is happening here? And we know that if they do sell the land, the school board's gung-ho for it, because like I said, it does benefit the school board significantly. What we'll do next, I'm not sure. I mean, there is a private Facebook group for Breslau residents, and there's still a lot of people still quite upset on that. So I'm not sure how to proceed forward and like you said, like a knowledgeable kind of like
right.
forward-thinking way versus a very reactionary, angry way. You're not going to get very far if you're just angry all the time.
Matthew, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the update.
Thank you.
All right. Matthew Vandermeer right there is a Breslau resident, and folks there are pretty upset about a school that the Waterloo Catholic District School Board that wants to put on in some green space. Look, there's a lot going on here. There really is. And you know, if I'm getting Matthew correct, it's that residents want to just have a say where the school is built. I mean, should they have a say where the school is built? And, you know, maybe perhaps the board and the township should listen. If residents are saying, we don't want it here, maybe they should look down the road. We'll take your calls and your emails. It's an interesting one. We'd love to know how you feel about it. We'll take your calls and your emails next. It's the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
There's never a dull week on Parliament Hill. We've got you covered on the week's events with McLean's on the Hill political podcast, available online on 570news.com.
There is a little tuck shop kind of snack bar stand there that can't be used because it's not a safe place. There is a single washroom that cannot be used because it's not sanitary or safe. So it's kind of this locked up building that's just there. So now they're saying, hey, we can upgrade your park if we sell this piece of land and we'll get some money from that and we'll use that money to upgrade your park. And many of the residents were saying, well, how come this hasn't been done already? Like, why are we waiting until now? It's because you want something from us now. Now you want to say we're going to upgrade your park.
570 Midday continues with Eric Drost.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here. Matthew Vandermeer there is a Breslau resident, and I thank him for joining us on the show and updating us on the school situation in Breslau. Basically, a lot of residents, and there was a meeting Thursday night. It was a public meeting, and he told us that about 200 people attended that, with only a few speaking in support of this project. In support of the Waterloo Catholic District School Board and them wanting to move a school to a green space in Breslau. So, I mean, I understand that residents are upset about, you know, most of the time it's communication and it's a lack of information being spread. I understand when people are upset about certain things like this. I take a look at the situation, though, and from my perspective, like, look, I don't live in the area, but I'm looking at it as it's a green space in a developing neighborhood that is growing rapidly, and the worst that's happening is that there's a school being put in a very small portion of a very large lot, a very large mass of land in this green space. I mean, look, there's already things there, and Matthew talked about some of the things that are there. So it's a win for the Catholic board for sure. And it's not like if you're paying a premium for your home to be backed out onto a green space, you've paid that premium because that's originally what this was about. You've paid that premium to the builder, and this has nothing to do with anything anymore. And now people coming out and talking about, well, it has to do with student safety and this and like, I don't buy the student safety argument. I don't buy that, to be completely honest. This is, and I don't want to say that it's completely a not in my backyard situation, but it sounds like it to an extent. It sounds a little bit like, yeah, we're all for the school. Just move it down the road a little bit because we have green space here. Jim is on the line. Go ahead, Jim.
If you won't say it, I will, Eric. It is. It's NIMBY all the way. I get so sick. I'm a country boy raised in a small village. Our village has grown by 2/3 over the past, I'd say, 12 years because of new subdivisions going in. The people come out from the city, and they're wonderful people. They're great people, but they're city people. Most of them still take their kids back to the city to play sports. Our local teams have died. But anyway, in the Breslau situation, I can't think of a more forward-thinking and a greater idea than combining all of these facilities for the use of the whole village to put in a library that's used by both the students and the village, to put in a gymnasium that has co-use, I assume with rooms off of it for meetings for the Lions, et cetera. What a wonderful idea. And it takes up, from what you were saying, just a little over 1/10 of their green area.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the Township of Woolwich and the school board should be patted on the back for using their heads and coming up for a solution that suits everybody except the people that it happens to be in their backyard. And I think that's the only explanation for not having it there. As far as the security goes, if you're that devastated, lock your kids in the basement and keep them there because they're exposed to the same adults every day in a small village.
Interesting comments. Thank you for the phone call, Jim. Appreciate that. This is no name here, but it says, I live in Hopewell Heights in Breslau, and there is a protected green space behind my house. That is the reason why we bought that piece of land. The school isn't going to affect me, but I can understand why some people wouldn't want the school built on green space near their houses. By the way, I paid $25,000 premium for that lot. Wow. John says, people inherently want schools close to their homes for their young kids. Be it Catholic or public, really doesn't matter in this case. I'm going to take a wild guess and say people just don't want the school and volume of all people associated with such a facility in their backyards, especially when not too long ago they had nothing around them. Hypocritically, though, wonder what the old residents of Breslau think about all the influx of new residents in their area just the same. kind of funny. Yeah, thank you for your phone calls and emails on that. It is a very interesting situation. We'll continue to follow that. 1228 on the Midday Show coming up at 1235. Stephanie Rozek is a founding board member of the CanWIT and also a Women in Engineering Committee at UW. We talk about women in tech. It's next on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Today, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. Things are changing every second. Sign up for 570 News breaking news alerts at 570news.com.
1235 on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News, and it is it's starting to look pretty nasty out there. So just make sure to keep it locked on 570 News. We have you updated, and we'll keep you up to date with all the traffic and weather information that you need to know throughout the afternoon. Now, the gender divide in professions such as engineering and computer science is a startling problem in Canada. According to Engineers Canada, about 88% of engineers are men. And that number is changing because of many programs that have been developed to attract girls into science programs. However, progress is slow. A report from Engineers Canada shows just 18.3% of undergraduate engineers' degrees were awarded to women across the country in 2013. That's slightly up from 17.6% in 2009. Stephanie Rozek, a director of Year of Code Waterloo Region and CEO and co-founder of Hackademy, joins us now to chat about some of the progress that has been made and what still needs to be done to make science more appealing for girls. So thank you so much for your time. How are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing very well. I find this to be a very interesting and fascinating thing to talk about because I've often wondered what universities are doing to try to attract more girls into engineering, sciences, you know, of course, things like that, because we've been hearing about this for so long. And here locally with the University of Waterloo, I mean, it just seems like a logical place to go to find out what's being done. So what is being done here locally?
For sure. So I've been on the Women in Engineering Committee at UW for about 2 years now, I think, as an alumna representative. And they received an award actually last year for their work that they're doing to get more women into engineering. And they have a fantastic group of people that put on events that are trying to engage the new undergrads. They reach out specifically to young women that are applying to try to get them more interested in engineering. They do a program called Go Eng Girl that is with younger girls around grade 7. It's a full-day thing, and it's been going on for years now, so the girls can come in and really get a taste of what engineering might be like. They have a program called Catalyst. They do summer camps. There's tons of stuff going on. And they're also starting a new program. I want to say, oh, I don't know the dates right now. It escapes me. But they're starting a new program also called Codemakers. And part of that is reaching out to young women to get them interested in engineering and STEM in general.
How young are we talking?
For which part?
Well,
I mean, they reach out to girls as young as, you know, I would say 10 or 12.
Okay.
And then right up until they're getting into university.
Interesting. I think, you know, since most university science programs, of course, require applicants to have taken advanced math science courses throughout high school, it seems like a logical focus area to me. Although, is it too late to try to attract women into sciences in high school? Should it be done earlier?
It definitely makes more of a difference if you focus on them earlier. There's different drop-off points for girls. So you're going to see some of them opting out, unfortunately, as young as 5. And then, you know, some of them will make it until grade 5 or 6. That's a really great age range to be reaching and engaging because they're not worried about what other people think at that point. You can still sort of appeal to, hey, look at the really cool stuff you can do with this. And so if you can engage them around that age, that is really helpful. By the time you get to high school, there's definitely, I mean, I think it's really important to keep supporting the ones who are there, but you're going to have less of an effect, I think. A lot is being done to get more girls to apply, but I think it's also equally important to look at what happens once they get into the stream. You know, let's support the ones that are in high school and are interested. Let's support the ones that actually make it to university so they don't drop out later, because that's also a big problem.
You mentioned that they're not worried about what they think when they're younger. Is that really the core of the issue? I mean, is that why women aren't going into sciences as much as men are, because they're worried about what people will think?
I don't think that's, no, that's definitely not all of it. And I mean, that's, we could sit down and have a 2-hour conversation and we wouldn't tap into all of it. But there's a number of factors at play. And I think a lot of it is that girls and women just aren't encouraged to go for those sorts of things. They may not see girls and women in the sciences or engineering portrayed, you know, in the media, for instance, or they may not have role models in their own lives they can follow. I find that a lot of people that I speak to, for instance, that maybe do software engineering, will have a story of how one of their parents did it.
Sorry, Stephanie, your phone was just cutting out for a second. You're good now. Go ahead.
Okay. So there's a phrase that says, you can't be what you can't see. And I really believe in that. We've got to provide role models and things that young women can look up to and say, hey, that could be me. Because if there's a vacuum and all they see is men, they're not going to be as inspired. Mm-hmm. And they've got to be stronger. I mean, I think certainly, you know, once they start hitting puberty and they're a little bit more awkward in their own lives or uncertain, I mean, that applies to all teens. But if you're a young woman who's 14, say, and is interested in joining the computer club, but it's all boys, you've got a pretty strong person and stubborn to actually want to carry on with it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I remember back in my university days, I went to Windsor, and mm-hmm. I mean, that was in 2003. I remember my first year sociology class, my professor telling us back then that 60% of every, you know, of all the people attending university were female. Is that still the case? I mean, there are a lot more females in university than there are males, right?
I don't know the exact numbers, but it has been increasing for sure. We're not seeing it in the computer science and engineering as much. I mean, it's actually been dropping over the past while. However, I should put a caveat that University of Waterloo saw as these things go, a large rise in the number of women enrolling in first year this fall. So that was really positive. And so things are happening. There are positive things happening, but it's just we have to keep supporting it.
You mentioned as well that even for some women who go into sciences, they end up dropping out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why
mm-hmm.
is that the case?
There's a number of things again here. It's not an easy issue. And so there are a lot of people trying to solve what the problem is. But I think a lot of it is very subtle. You know, maybe in the 50s, it was more obvious women were not encouraged to go into non-traditional fields, the same as men weren't, you know. And so now, officially, they are more encouraged. But a lot of the sort of discrimination or different types of treatment of staff, that's kind of gone underground, and it's more subtle and you don't notice what's happening. So I think people need to realize, and this is men and women, that we have biases, perhaps against women working in non-traditional fields, and be aware of that and try to do things to promote the women for staying. So there's been a lot of talk about mentorship, and I think that's certainly valuable because you need to have support when you're trying to keep going in a field, but it's not always going to be the most accommodating necessarily. But I think we also need to start talking about sponsorship and having people who are, you know, in managerial roles or places where they can actually help support women's careers and actually do that, because studies have shown that men, for example, they tend to be promoted more on promise and potential, whereas women are promoted on their past successes. So what that typically tends to look like is the men get promoted sooner than the women. So it's a bit of an uphill battle. But awareness is the first thing, honestly, and then having companies commit to making it better.
I'm really glad that when you mentioned bias, you mentioned both men and women, because I think it's not fair to just say, well, it's, you know, the men or the fathers that don't, you know. I remember growing up playing sports, and I was put into hockey, of course, from a young age. When my sister wanted to play hockey, it was my mother, not my dad. It was my mother who said, no, that's not for girls. She's going into soccer. And then turns out she blew out her knee in playing soccer and couldn't play again. And now we have stats that show that actually you get more concussions in soccer than hockey. So it's just, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that part of the problem is that a lot of people think that it's specifically, you know, the dads that don't want to see this happening.
And that's not true at all. I mean, you can go online and do a search for like bias test or something. And I've done it, and I'm slightly biased towards men in traditional fields, and I'm looking at this stuff all the time. I mean, I live and breathe it. So the fact that even I still have that traditional bias built in because of how I grew up is kind of telling. So I think if people are aware of that and then they make commitments to say, well, actually, this is important to me to have more equal representation in non-traditional fields, And then how do I do that? And reaching out to organizations that can help with that. And there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, the University of Waterloo's Women in Engineering Group is one specific example, but there's lots of stuff happening in the region. There's lots of stuff happening across Canada, across the world.
Interesting.
So there are resources.
Yeah. Stephanie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to talk to you.
All right. Yeah, you as well. Stephanie Rozek right there is the director of Year of Code Waterloo Region and the CEO and co-founder of Hacademy. My thanks to her. Coming up, Chris Wood, General Manager of the Region of Waterloo International Airport, joins me. We'll tell you about a committee originally created to deal with noise complaints. They have now been tasked with something more positive. I'll tell you about that with Chris Wood. Next, it's the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Being a parent is a round-the-clock job. So if you missed today's parent report on 570 News, you can listen anytime on the audio page at 570news.com.
All right, welcome back. 12:49 on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. A committee, which was originally created to deal with noise complaints, has now been tasked with something a little bit more positive. The Region of Waterloo International Airport Aeronautical Noise Advisory Committee will now also work on promoting the airport. It's a revised mandate that was approved by regional councillors, and the goal is to get more information out to the public about the airport's value. General Manager Chris Wood joins us now to share the new direction that the committee will be moving in. Chris, thank you so much. How are you? Beautiful out there, isn't it?
It's great, yeah. I'm great, thanks, Eric. We're just waiting for this freezing rain to hit.
That's right, and then everybody's going to be slipping and sliding. So tell me about this committee. This was something that was originally kind of created to deal with some noise complaints, right?
Yeah, the committee has been around since about 2000. It's done great work over the years and continues to do great work. In the last couple of years, we've really sort of moved into a role of hearing a lot of complaints about a single noisy airplane, mostly, and we really want to get back to being proactive and talking about the operational rules and some of the needs and constraints that the airport is actually under. So more to get out the word as opposed to just being hearing the complaints.
It is important, isn't it, Chris, to get the word out there to people, because I think there are so many questions surrounding the airport. I mean, and look, maybe more so just obviously with the general public than maybe members of the media or yourself or people that work at the airport. But in the general public, I mean, there seems to be a lot of questions surrounding the airport, and this is one way of getting some information out.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There really is a lot of questions and misinformation, and we're going to explore that as a committee to try and find the best way to talk to people. Of course, we're still going to have the mandate. If people have a concern, they're more than welcome to appear in front of the committee or work through their designated official or give us a call at the airport. We investigate every single complaint and can get back to people with the information.
You mentioned that the committee was originally formed in 2000. And that was specifically for noise?
Yes. So
okay.
It was in conjunction with the master plan that
right.
Was approved in 2000.
Okay. And so that's obviously ongoing and has been for since 2000, and it's still going to be the case where people are still going to be able to go and voice their complaints. Have complaints been increasing, decreasing? Where are we at with that?
Yeah, so in the last 2 years, they definitely increased, peaked last year about the summer, but have steadily decreased again since about June of last year when we had our Baffin Island flight operated by Nolinor Airlines moved from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. departures, and that has really seemed to help. Mm-hmm. And we're grateful that they voluntarily did that.
You know, it seems to me as the region grows and as more people are living here, obviously it makes sense that more people would be complaining, no?
Well, there's more people living here, and also the skies are getting busier as well. So there's a lot of traffic attributed to other airports that people hear in the middle of the night going into Hamilton or Toronto. You know, we live in underneath the busiest airspace in the country. So we do get a fair amount of people concerned with noise from other airports. have really nothing to do with our airport.
Yeah, Chris Wood, General Manager with the Region of Waterloo International Airport, joins us on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. It is 12:53. What would you like everyone to know? I mean, if there's one thing that you'd like anybody to know about but the airport, what would that be?
Well, you know, we recently did, we worked with Wilfrid Laurier University and did a study on the economic impact of the airport. There's about 300 people that work here at the airport in about 20 different companies. And we create about an $86 million per year economic impact on the region of Waterloo. So it's quite significant. And it has grown. We've done this now. This is the third study we've done. And it has grown each time we did it. So we're going in the right direction and contributing to the economy positively to the region. So we're really, we really want to spread that word. We really do try to be the best neighbor that we can be. Airplanes do make noise. Airplanes always land and take off into the wind. So it really isn't, someone deciding that they want to fly over Kitchener or fly over Guelph a certain day. It really is dictated by wind conditions.
There's some science behind that, isn't there?
There is.
As far as promoting the airport, can you talk a little bit about what the committee might be doing?
Well, our first committee meeting under this new terms of reference that we expect will be approved by Regional Council at tomorrow's meeting is Thursday, so it's the next day. So we're going to we're going to have some new folks on the committee, so we're really going to spend that meeting trying to educate them on the history and give them sort of an Aviation 101 briefing. Some people are, citizen reps that have no prior experience with this or not, and a couple of new counselors as well from the city of Kitchener and the townships. So we're going to spend that meeting, and we're going to talk a little bit about who would like to step up as chair. One of the other ideas that came out and has now been approved by council, or will be approved by council tomorrow, is that I'm no longer the chair of the committee, which I think is a really smart move. It's really difficult to be the chair and also be the airport general manager. So we're going to let, we're going to be consistent with other regional committees, and we're going to have a chair elected, and we'll go from there, and then we'll start the discussions, and the chair can lead us through those discussions on how we can, get out front of it and put some positive information out there.
All right, Chris, good luck with that. We'll stay with the story, and maybe we'll check back with you at some point. Thank you so much. Have yourself a good day, okay?
Thanks for having me, Eric.
All right, Chris Wood right there is the general manager of the region of Waterloo International Airport. So a new committee, well, technically the same committee that was created in 2000 to deal with noise complaints, is now being tasked with also promoting the airport. It's a revised mandate that was approved by regional councillors. And the goal, as you heard Chris say, is to get more information out to you, the public, about the airport's value. So we'll keep a track of that, and we'll update you as much as we can. It is 12:57 here on the Midday Show. Coming up at 1:05, we'll tell you how you can get at least $20 in your pocket. How does that sound? Talk about an $80 million class action lawsuit. John Foreman is a lawyer, and he'll be joining me from London, and we'll tell you how you can get at least $20 in your pocket. Sounds pretty good, right? And hey, radio's free, so you could actually be making money listening to the Midday Show. Tell all your friends. We'll let you know how to make $20, at least $20. If you're watching us on Rogers TV, thank you so much. Stick around. Daytime is next. We're back with much more right here on 570 News.